1992, I organized a research group consisting of best qualified individuals to ever study the death of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Our whole objective was to take rumor and speculation out of the case and place it on an objective and scientific foundation. We discovered that the autopsy x-rays had been fabricated to conceal a massive blow to the back of the head, that a brain had been substituted for the president's brain during the supplemental autopsy exam, that even the Zapruder film, an enhanced version created by a member of my research group, which Ace Baker was showing you here this morning, has been recreated to conceal not only the effects of that blowout to the back of the head, including brains and debris scattered over the trunk that was so conspicuous that it nauseated Secret Service agents when they observed it, but the fact that the driver, William Greer, pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt to make sure Jack Kennedy would be killed after bullets began to be fired. Now, when it comes to 9/11, my efforts have all been dedicated to achieving precisely the same objective, to taking rumor and speculation out of the case and placing its study on an objective and scientific foundation. This is the reason when I discovered that scientist of the caliber of Judy Wood. Now, I've spent so much time seeking to open minds, to broaden imagination, to consider alternatives that one might prefer were not the case. But if we're going to find the truth, we have to be dedicated to the principles of scientific reasoning to which my whole professional life has been devoted. And I'll say today, when it comes to the study of this video fakery, you've seen a brilliant scientific objective analysis from this man, Ace Baker. And I say that between the breadth of study provided by September Clues and depth of study provided by Ace Baker, that there's a prima facie case, there's a case that has to be overwhelmed by superior evidence if it can be produced, not only of the existence of video fakery, but the overwhelming probability that to manage events and make sure everything came out right, they did the whole thing through the media without planes. I'm telling you, the evidence is growing, and whether you can find yourself convinced of that at this point in time, I have spent an enormous amount of pondering how to deal with this issue. And I'm so impressed now that it seems to me to be coming to a head where we have studies of the brilliance of this. But I say the case is the preponderance of the evidence now, and I believe to the physics of the situation, because the point that Rosalie's been making about Newstone law is the following. Just as a plane in motion impacts a building with a certain force, so if that plane were stationary and the building were in motion, it would impact with the same force, the same force. You're talking about a flying tin can. Morgan was showing you lots of anecdotal evidence. He was showing you lots of pictures and planes. Anecdotal evidence is a form of proof, but it's not as convincing as objective and scientific studies. What Ace Baker has done is to complement the message. What September Clues has done is to show you the whole panoply of range of varieties in which this was being done. And I say, you have to take this seriously. We are, in Paul's lawyer's phrase, we're down the rabbit hole. This whole thing has been a massive deception. I say, you go all the way back to JFK, fraudulently chicanery, changing the evidence. Jack was shot 4 different times. John Connor, anywhere from 1 to 3. James Tagg, a distant bystander, was hit by a bullet that missed, or at least 2 others. There were 8, 9, or 10 shots from 6 different directions fired in Dealey Plaza. How many of you know that? It's objective and provable. And what's fascinating about all this stuff is that not only have we discovered in each of these cases, JFK and 9/11, that what the government has told us is false, and we're not only able to prove it, but it's very largely dependent upon basic assumptions that aren't even physically possible because they violate laws of nature, laws of physics, engineering, and aerodynamics. And I say, I'm brought back to that stunning observation of Arthur Conan Doyle, Namely, that when you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Now, I'm not insisting things are all settled. We've got a huge area of controversy. I think today was an utterly fascinating session psychologically for the following reason. They had Morgan Reynolds, who's been pilloried, like practically no one else has been pilloried for even advancing the idea that there's no planes. He gave anecdotal evidence that left the issue very much up in the air. A whole lot of you wanted to express your opinion. Dave Von Kleist very articulately expressed his views with great force. And then Morgan left the room. Morgan was being interviewed by Paula Gloria. And Ace Baker comes up here, and Ace Baker is a very subdued guy. Ace Baker has not been the subject of vilification. Ace Baker wasn't, an object of hostility. And by God, because Morgan was gone, and we vented our spleen, we could listen to a patient explanation of what actually happened in terms of a methodical analysis of actual footage, and the point was proven, and it was brilliant. And you are here. Now, I want to take advantage of this hour we have before lunch and before we adjourn to allow any of you to come up here and say into the mic and say to Review Radio Network, to which I am enormously indebted for broadcasting this program live, any comment you have, any question you want to raise. I want you to come up here so everyone can hear, and we get it in the record, and you're invited to do that. That's what I'm doing now.
Where's Jim Mars?
Jim Mars. Jim Mars is here, and Jim Mars is the voice in particular I want to get up here to offer you his reflections on the conference. But I'm doing that last. I'm doing that last. Listen, in any conference, you got to make a judgment if you're managing this thing as to what's most important and what's not. Believe me, having Ace Baker complete his presentation was overwhelmingly more important than merely having some reflections from some of us from whom you've already heard. Jim Mars is the one figure from whom you've not heard. I said you were going to hear from someone you haven't heard from yet, and I'm going to get him up here. Count on it.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Rob, sign up, no name tag. I'm not an interloper here. I'm just an MS graduate from the University of Wisconsin in engineering. I want to have some more fun here, follow up. First, let's make sure we have that mail list to distribute and to remain in touch, because I'm proposing two fun contests. The first one being, I was in engineering and I hated calculus, so we got to simplify the math. So, simple math contest. How do you keep score? Team A, let's say we're all on Team A. Team B, the other guys. Okay, we have evidence, we have inconsistencies up the gazoo. So if we do some simple math, forget the details, and just look at the, I used to keep scoring kickball, dash, 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 dash line. Okay, we have how many consistencies that we can document, but again, forget the details, just keeping score. Team A, I kind of keeping a simple scorecard here. I have Pentagon hole, that's one item, long dash slashes, debris, that's another item, WPC 1, the video that was just entered by Baker here, missile, no missile, another evidence score for our side, and the other side has one point for each of those categories. Right here, my simple math shows 28 to 4. Okay, we've won. Now what? I'm challenging you to come up with your own simple math on how this eliminate the details. We score 1 point. This item, this item, this item. Team B, the other guys, the official conspiracy, 1 point for each of those categories. Work out your own simple math and submit it to our shared email list. And we got to have that leaving here. And the other contest would be, I want a bunch of simple pocket experiments I can take on the street with me and have hands-on anybody I talk to play the game with me. Try this simple experiment. I don't think I can do the precise, elegant video analysis with the guy on the street, but I need something physically in my pocket to show, hey, you can see what I saw. Try to hear this plane going by. Just imagine. Play the contest and submit your pocket experiments on why 9/11 was a total inside job. So let's have some fun with this and submit your ideas.
excellent, simply excellent. And if you'd like to put together a list here while you are here of those email addresses, we have a list, but it may be incomplete and overlapping. I'll compare what we have formally from registration with what you may have.
I'm Paula Gloria. I'm the host of a show called Farther Down the Rabbit Hole in Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Monday through Friday. I'm really pleased that I got this interview with Morgan Reynolds. I came here to hear Judy Wood. I was overwhelmed by Sitakis, and he's going to be in New York, so I hope to get that. I also want to acknowledge what Jim Fetzer has gone through to bring this conference together, and I'm hoping when we take the footage away and we edit it, we can come up with something constructive that will bring all of the different factions together, because I was in Philadelphia for the Philadelphia Platform on not July 4th, but Independence Day, just recently. And at that event, the peace movement came together with the 9/11 truth movement, and I guess they were also globalization people, saying that we can no longer avoid the tough issues, but we have to go right at the tough issues. I was a little discouraged that Webster Tarpley didn't speak until the very end, because I guess he was considered a little controversial on the tough issues, because I wanted the Iraqi war veterans to see this body of knowledge that the 9/11 truthers have put together. And again, I've been on some conference calls, more or less organized by a group called actindependent.org. And I have heard with my own ears people from all over coming, not just from 9/11 Truth, but from the peace movement. And they've approached it in different ways. And like I said to Morgan Reynolds, some of us may be Republicans and Democrats, liberals or conservatives, using different strategies, but we're all trying to create a greater, more powerful America. So I just want to encourage you at this point. I think the most effective way to not spin wheels but to apply the great knowledge that you've gained is the Philadelphia Platform, and you can find out about it on actindependent.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula.
Hello, my name is Maggie, and I'm just attending the conference out of interest. I just wanted to say that it occurs to me, the first thing about the factions, that a truth movement with factions is already, the truth would have factions, is already something for us to look at and challenge ourselves as to how this could possibly exist in our minds at all possible. I always thought reality was not a variable. But then again, you know, I haven't thought about this so much analytically in a scientific way as has been done today, this morning. However, as far as proof is concerned, I mean, there is a standard, a legal standard, beyond a reasonable doubt. And to me, the burden of proof having been put on this movement to disabuse the notions that the newscasters and the traditional, you know, purveyors of whatever information are laying on us. But the burden is on this movement to overcome the fact that we already accept that as truth. Again, the barriers being in your mind, I think that's a very cogent point that was made by Ace Baker, and what to do about them are what remains to be the most important issue here. No matter how many tests we have of the physical science, there are people who have no training in that area, and the believability of what they're being told, it makes no difference to them whether or not you can prove it, whether or not you can take the time to do some simple mathematical tests. We have to challenge the idea that if Fox News tells us something is so, that it has been so. That, to me, is a burden that is also incumbent upon this movement, not just to disprove scientific facts, but basically to take that construct in the mind of the general public and, I guess in the words of Silverstein, to pull it. So, again, there's a few things that occur to me, even without scientific facts to back them up, that just bear awakening the general public. Why is it, for instance, that AIG Insurance has already had to pay back for insider trading on an issue that how could they have had foreknowledge of it if it wasn't planned? That to me is an inconsistency I still don't understand. Billions of dollars repaid due to insider trading about 911, and if they had to pay it back at least they had to prove to some court beyond a reasonable doubt that they had traded, you know, with insider knowledge. Where did that knowledge come from? That already says something is wrong, without a scientific argument to even have to prove that. And then another one is, again, just Silverstein himself. How can we watch this man saying, pull it, and think, well, okay, that came down because it was on fire? I just don't understand how that cognitive dissonance can live on in the minds of the public, with or without...
Silverstein has more snow and bone occupants in his building than any other property manager in the United States.
Exactly, and it was an unrentable building. Nobody wanted those upper floors, and it was costing money. It had been leased for the first time ever. It had been owned by, Port Authority of New York, New Jersey, forever. I mean, if those aren't mobbed-up organizations, again, not a scientific fact, but something I think that consistently shows the venality and the lies are as consistent as the motion of that plane should have been. So, again, we need to wake up and figure out why the public will buy into any of this stuff, and that's at least as important as any scientific fact.
Thanks, Maggie. Of course.
Is it true that the city turned down plans to have those towers at
Emerald? Not to my knowledge. My understanding is that the Port Authority had issued to the Silverstein properties instructions that they had to handle the asbestos problem in the building, which was going to be a huge task.
They
found a way, I suppose. Just a brief comment on Maggie's opening remark. There is, I take it, objective truth. The point is that these divisions arise because of disagreements over what you take to be the truth, what you take to be the evidence, what you take to be the hypotheses, what you're willing to consider and how rigorously you're willing to consider it. I mean, in principle, scientific reasoning is defined by a set of objective principles that represent four stages of puzzlement, speculation, adaptation, and explanation. And the principles of reasoning, which are built upon probabilities and likelihoods, are perfectly objective. And the requirements to satisfy scientific reasoning are themselves well understood, insofar as scientific reasoning must be based upon all of the available relevant evidence. The fact is that these divisions occur when one group is willing to bias the case by only looking at a restricted range of hypotheses or certain kinds of evidence and unwilling to consider the rest. Scholars for 9/11 Truth is committed wholeheartedly to an objective scientific investigation of all of the alternatives based upon all of the available relevant evidence and letting the chips fall where they may. Next, Claire.
Thank you, Jim. I'm Claire Grandebert. I live in Istanbul, Turkey. And my concern with 9/11, I don't really have any specialties to add to the truth that 9/11 was an inside job, but I'm concerned with genocide research, and many of the things I've heard yesterday and today have made me feel, thank God I'm not alone. But I'd like to tell you something that happened on the 12th of September, 9/12, in a large prison called Gaza, where some of the people who've been marked for extermination are behind incredible prison walls. Their every move is observed from drones overhead. It's a free fire zone. People can be shot, hit with missiles, hit with tank fire, and they're starving. They are literally starving. The sanctions down on Hamas have made it impossible to bring food inside, so that there's a systematic attempt to starve these people into submission. And as a former student of mine says, with whom I keep in close touch, what the pressure is destroying the social contract. People are fighting each other for food, which is really disgusting. And so I'm anxious for 9/11 to be really exposed for what it is, because I care a lot about these people who are being exterminated. And I want to tell you something about some of these terrorists. These are the others. These are people we've been taught to suspect and despise, the Muslims, the Arabs. On the day after 9/11, there were lines, queues formed in both hospitals in the Gaza Strip, and people lined up to give blood to the American victims of 9/11. I have here some contact information. The only way you can send money to these starving people now is through Western Union, because all the banks have been forbidden to send money, to transfer money. And they may tighten up on Western Union as well. I have contact information for people who could receive the money, who are responsible, who know who the most needy people are, and I'll be glad to share this with anybody afterward. Thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing, and let's hope we get 9/11 out there right away. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire.
Exactly. And here we are in the Return of the Jedi. Basically, trying to craft in the last days, possibly the Republic, a lightsaber, a saber of light, to see if it can go up the inlets of the Death Star to explode it, and all the Sith Lords with it. Figuratively speaking, of course. So when I was growing up, my hero was Muhammad Ali. And he went to jail for a couple of years for his beliefs. And you remember the his phrase, "Oh, like a butterfly, sting like a bee." He was one of the most brilliant strategists, I think, of the 20th century. His rope-a-dope strategy. And I think we have to have that comfort level with what we're doing here. When we're on Fox News, when they ask us, so you believe in the no-plane theory and exotic weapons and video factory and all this, and, well, can you prove it? You can say, yes, we can prove it. And it's proved by the Lamont Doherty facility that found that the explosion went off 14 seconds before the planes hit the building, and the second building was 17 seconds.
The seismic record, right.
And there were 37 witnesses that were verifying that with their personal stories. And they can say, well, what do you mean? That means, and they can go off into their question about the no planes and the video record, and we can then flip it right into another question of the Pentagon story. The clock all stopped 5 minutes before the small hole was made by the entry wound in the building of the Pentagon, and on into all the light poles that were not destroyed and the perfect graphs, and we can make a perfect visual picture for people in a very simple way, a very scientific way, with the seismic record and information in the Pentagon. So thanks.
Thanks very much. Marjorie?
Hello, my name is Marjorie Lundquist. I'm a PhD physicist. I don't know whether I'm the only PhD physicist who's here, but it might be the case. And I'd like to share with you some of my thoughts after having been through the conference up to this point. I was especially impressed with the presentation from Judy Wood, because I began thinking to myself, why am I going to see that? I had always thought to myself, that was an awful lot of dust present from the news reports for something that was supposed to be a fire and then a complete demolition. And now I think she has put her finger on what's going on. Something caused, I think the phrase she used was molecular dissociation. And so I was asking myself, do I know anything about this that might be useful or could contribute? Now, to explain why I might know something about directed energy weapons, even though I've never studied that topic, let me give you a little bit of background. Around 1980, I became interested in some of the reported health effects that were associated with video displays, because they were rather peculiar, and that morphed into an interest in the health effects of non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation, and that got me interested in microwave radiation. And it didn't take a whole lot of time for me to learn that there was a lot of controversy over the health effects of microwave radiation. It's become quite apparent to me that the U.S. Department of Defense has not wanted the public to know about the full spectrum of health effects from microwave radiation, because they've gone to great lengths to cover this up in a variety of ways, one of which was to put the kibosh on a medical doctor who was trying to warn his colleagues, and by extension, I suppose, the public in general, although back then medical doctors wrote for other medical doctors, and the public hadn't started reading the medical literature in great numbers as they did later on. His name was John T. McLaughlin, and what he wrote and published, one was in California Medicine and the other was in Western Medicine, in 1957 and 1962, if I recall my dates correctly, were two articles. One of them was a report on a death, which he attributed to exposure to radiation, microwave radiation, from a new transmitter, a new high-power transmitter. You have to remember that radar helped us win World War II and played a very important role in both airports and harbors for preventing collisions of aircraft and ships and so on. And it was considered absolutely essential, both for that rather pedestrian purpose, and also for worrying about incoming airplanes or ships that might be enemies. You had to keep track of those, and you could use radar for that purpose. So it was played an important defense role, and from the military's point of view, which I can quite understand, you did not want anything to prevent you from using radar. And they could live with a standard that had been proposed for protection against the thermal effects of this radiation. The non-thermal effects exist. I understand now what they're due to and why they occur, and I have some information on that which I will share with you. But let me just make a point on this death that Dr. McLaughlin reported in the medical literature. It was suggested to him by an experience of a worker at Hughes Aircraft. By the hospital spokesman. He said, this looks like a case of mild radiation poisoning. You should investigate. Mild radiation poisoning, when the radiation that he was exposed to was microwave radiation, which is not ionizing. I realized that our understanding of the health hazards associated with ionizing radiation is mistaken in that, understandably, it was initially assumed that ionizing radiation was hazardous because it was ionizing. And what I've learned is that that's not the truth. There are hazards associated with the three modes of interaction that non-ionizing radiation can have with matter, plus, if you're dealing with ionizing radiation, whatever additional effects occur in self-ionization. So there's not much doubt that ionizing radiation is more hazardous than non-ionizing radiation because it is ionizing. But the assumption that all of the health effects of ionizing radiation are due to the fact that it is ionizing is not correct, because non-ionizing radiation also possesses the capability to cause some of these same effects, which include cancer. And that's, I think, can be proved from the existing evidence. residents, but also it looks like a lot of the autoimmune diseases we're experiencing today are another type of health effect. I'm not going to get into the details of that other than to say that if anybody wants to talk to me about these health effects that are attributable to non-ionizing radiation, then I will be glad to talk to them. Now, back to the molecular dissociation. I think, you see, the reason my concerns about health are relevant to this conference is because the laws of physics are the laws of physics, and they apply as much to biological matter as to any other kind. So I simply assumed when I was looking into this that whatever health effects might occur had to be based on established principles of physics that would govern the interaction of non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation with matter, whether inanimate or inanimate. And that does seem to be the case. I haven't seen any reason to think that's not true. My guess is that the molecular dissociation that seems to have occurred at the World Trade Center probably was due to a maser. People are very familiar with lasers, but the maser was invented first. And that's the same phenomenon at microwave frequencies. Now, at microwave frequencies, the various effects that occur will be damaging to human health without much doubt. Molecular dissociation means that you must be destroying chemical bonds or altering them in order to cause molecules to fall apart or substances to disintegrate. I think microwaves can do that. A coherent beam sounds to me like a very good choice if I was to try to set out to invent one of these. The sharp edges that Judy Wood had pointed out certainly does suggest something of a laser type of phenomenon, coherent radiation, which does have very sharp edges to the beam, as I understand it. So that's my guess. I think we have a very sophisticated laser type of directed energy weapon that must have been utilized somehow at the World Trade Center. I can talk about other aspects such as the characteristics of the field and so on, but I won't get into that. But I just wanted to point out that there has been this kind of cover-up, and I think I'm now understanding why the Department of Defense doesn't seem to want to rectify the errors that have arisen about the microwave radiation health hazard standards.
Marjorie, thank you for those exceptional remarks. Lorraine Moran.
I just want to thank Jim Spector for organizing this really wonderful conference. I think the most important thing that was established here is the wonderful presentation that Judy Wood did in a very objective way. And, you know, she just laid the information down for us and we could do whatever we want to with it. And that's basically what I do. I walk away and I just give people the information. I went, Alfred and I went to Kuala Lumpur in February. And there were all kinds of people invited. 5,000 people came to this anti-war conference. It was fantastic. And the former Prime Minister of Malaysia organized it. And I was asking him and his former Secretary, Matthias Chang, why would they, worried about the infiltrators and the gatekeepers and the blah, 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 the different opinions. They said, oh, no, we invite everyone. We want everyone to come, even the gatekeepers and even the infiltrators. We want them all to come because the truth stands in the end. And what opinions people have or disagreements or whatever, it doesn't really matter. The power of the truth wins in the end, if you allow it to be expressed. And that's what Jim and Kevin have done. So thank you all very, very much. This was a really nice conference, and thank you, Judy, for your outstanding presentation.
Lauren Moray, ladies and gentlemen. Barbara Honegger.
A little bit closer to it. Hello? Okay, good. Okay. I would also like to, number one, thank Jim Fetcher for organizing this wonderful conference. It's been extremely valuable to all of us, including myself. What I would like to do is, obviously for every one of us, it's going to take us a lot of digesting this huge amount of information from many, many different perspectives, some of them frankly contradictory, that we have heard at this conference. I'd like to give you my overview, my bottom line of what I have learned from this conference, and it has taken me personally a step forward to understanding what I think is the ground truth of what happened and didn't happen on 9/11. I'd like to begin by reminding you that the fundamental scientific principle is Occam's razor. Use the simplest explanation that you can to explain all of the available relevant facts that matter. You can call that in lay terms the KISS or keep it simple, stupid principle. Okay, so following the Occam's razor KISS principle, what have I personally learned, and you can decide if you agree with it or not, from everything that I know brought to the conference and have learned at the conference. Number one, it's very clear to me now, especially after the video of fakery presentations, I won't say evidence, but presentations, that what we do know, and all we really know, and remember my presentation about bombs inside the building at the Pentagon, all we really know is that there are explosions at the Pentagon, followed by a building wall collapse, and all we really know is that there are explosions, first in the basement level, and then up above, at the World Trade Center, followed by the collapse of the building. At the Pentagon, explosions inside, then collapse. At the World Trade Center, explosions that you can see and then collapse. All of the so-called video fakery presentations that you have seen are only about the alleged plane impact. My mind has been open at this conference to the very serious possibility that there were no, that what you see on the television screens were in fact faked with a background, faked B-roll of a plane coming in that was overlaid with a 17-second delay. Now, but let me point out to you, that doesn't at all impact what we all know, that there were explosions at the basement of the tower, explosions up above following the basement explosion in World Trade Center 1, followed by a collapse of those buildings, and then, of course, later, World Trade Center 7 by a closet-controlled demolition. What we do know, is that Judy Woods, in my mind, has absolutely proven that Stephen Jones's sperm 8 is not sufficient, that it's sperm 8 plus. Whether it ends up being a maser at that plus, or a laser at that plus, or as Doug Locke suggested, sperm 8 plus a Davy Crockett mini nuke, or a combination of them that could create those 26 wide cylinder holes in the World Trade Center, we don't know. But we have to keep our minds open to sperm 8 plus some kind of exotic weapon. And so the bottom line is, all we really know is explosions plus collapse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. Judy, sure. Come on. Judy Wood.
It was asked, what can we tell the person on the street? And using the KISS idea, keeping it simple, how would you explain the plane put on someone on the street? Well, I did just that. You can imagine how I teach my classes. I show roadrunner cartoons to demonstrate shear stress. That plate of the roadrunner cutout through the steel plate, you measure the perimeter of that cutout times the thickness of the plate, and you have the surface area that had to be broken when the roadrunner went through. And there's another colleague who would teach the same class as I would, and I was known for showing these roadrunner cartoons. So I thought it would be fun to show him what the picture of the North Tower looked like. Because that's what really did it for me when I saw that cookie cutter cutout. It was even smaller than an airplane, and it winds up make 5-inch slice out there at the end of the wing tip. I showed him, he never requested 9/11. I never talked with him about 9/11. I took him to my website and showed him that picture of the cookie cutter cutout. He looked at me and said, "Where'd you get this picture?" I told him the internet, and I showed him, "Well, there's more." And he looked at me, jaw dropped. He said, "Something is wrong with the story we were told." So it was just, at that point, he knew that there was no plane that could have done that. Plain and simple. Didn't know any other details about 9/11. But a plane cannot make a cookie cutter hole.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Rosalie Grable, the Web Fairy. I'm the first one to have publicly noticed that there were no planes, and for this I took like 5 years of every sort of mud flung at me and bad words and anything else that they could think of, and it hurt me a lot. I mean, I am a walking through the pain, but people know now they really didn't use planes. They used an FCS, Future Combat Systems, to geoposition what looked kind of like the real thing mixed with real. The purpose is fictionalization. They take what's real and what's fake and make it so that we can't tell the difference. And this is the same gang who is behind Joint, this and that. You read them, you know, they try to pretend that it just means the mixture of the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. But no, this is not American at all. Well, parts are. It's bigger than that, and it's part of this globalization effort. And we have thoroughly documented what companies have the contracts to produce the different parts of this FCS, which now that we've discovered it, they're suddenly going to be known. But it's there. It can be found by anybody who wants to look at various corporate entities who are making money off of perpetual slavery. Bye.
Thank you, Rosalind. Dave, if you want to come down, I'll be glad to have you to make a few remarks. Christian? Christian came from Germany.
Thanks for coming.
This morning I had the possibility for a short talk, for a short discussion with Dr. Julie Wood about the energy which is necessary in order to destroy the World Trade Center with a so-called directed high-energy weapon, and she told me there isn't a lot of energy necessary. So please let me say just one sentence. The Machiavellian state terrorists organized their 9/11 coup d'etat while also saving energy. Thank you.
Marvelous. Dave, why come on? Dave, why? Why? In 9/11 in plain sight, at the very end, for those of you who saw it, you may recall that I said if we're ever going to get to the truth of this or any other issue, we have to leave ego and pride out of the equation, come together with a common purpose, throw all the puzzle pieces onto the table, and work together to solve the puzzle. Now, granted, some pieces are going to be bigger than others, but you can't get the complete picture without all the puzzle pieces. And although some of the information here that was presented today is very compelling, and I have to think very long and hard, we all have the right to be wrong. And as a matter of fact, you may recall, and some of you saw the very first edition of In Plain Sight. How many saw the issue about the plume, the rising plume? A few of you did, okay. There was a clip in there that showed this rising plume of smoke, and many of us concluded that there was an explosion at the base of the tower before the collapse of either one of the towers. And I was, in that particular school of thought, that was originally posted at the WAG the WTC website. And the only clip that we had at the time was the clip that was posted on the internet, a very jerky clip of about 6 or 7 frames. And so we put that into the 9/11 In Plain Sight project. And of course, I wasn't the only one that was coming to that conclusion. Eric Hufschmidt, in his book, Painful Questions, had a photograph of that and said that that was an explosion at the base of the tower. George Humphreys, in his 9/11 The Great Illusion video, also said that this was an explosion at the base of the tower before the collapse.
And so I put it in there and asked the question, is this an explosion at the base of the tower? Well, on September 11th of 2004, Jimmy Walter, you may recall, had a great big event at the Manhattan Ballroom in New York City, and I was invited to speak there. Some of you may have seen the video clip of that event. And just before leaving, the day before I left to go to New York, I received in the mail a VHS tape that somebody had found of the complete video clip of that exact angle without the jerky footage. It was while Tom Clancy was being interviewed on CNN. I saw the clip, and I realized that what we were seeing was indeed the rising plume from a collapsing tower that was completely hidden from view. I realized that I'd made a mistake. So the first thing I did is I went to William Lewis, the director, and I said, hey, burn me a DVD immediately. I'm leaving, you know, in 7 hours to fly to New York. So he burned me a DVD, and I went to New York, and I was showing it to everybody. I said, hey, guess what? This issue about this rising plume that Eric Hutchman brought up and that George Humphreys brought up and that I had in plain sight. And by the way, at the same time, I said, stop all sales of 9/11 in plain sight. We have to correct this and put out a director's cut. So that's what we did. Okay, when a man who's honestly mistaken hears the truth, he will either quit being mistaken or he will cease to be honest. Okay, I made a mistake. I corrected the mistake, and when I went to New York, I was showing everybody the DVD. I had my laptop. I was going to show it. I was going to show it on the big screen, but there were a lot of clips I wanted to show. But for some reason, there was some politicking going on, and I wasn't allowed to show some of these clips. And I really wish that I had. But the point is I had this video, and I showed it to everybody. And Gloriotti, before I even returned home, there were posts all over the internet. Von Kleist admits to a hoax. Von Kleist admits that he lied. And Von Kleist, you know, I just can't believe this. But the bottom line here is that we all have the right to be wrong. Some of us go through our lives with exclamation points over our heads instead of question marks. When you have an exclamation point over your head, that's a claim that I know. And once you claim that you know, you cease to learn. The doors close. Now, some of us have question marks. Most of us here have question marks over our heads. And it's very difficult sometimes to swallow your pride and your ego and admit that you may have made a mistake. Now, there's a possibility, absolutely, that either I made a mistake or Morgan made a mistake or Rosalie made a mistake. There are so many different versions of what could happen. And I don't mean to take up all the time here, but I think these are important points. If you have one person over here who says he has the truth, and another person over here says he has the truth, but they disagree, then that means only one thing. Either this guy's right and this guy's wrong, or this guy's right and this guy's wrong. But guess what, folks? They both can't be right.
They could both be wrong.
They could both be wrong. That's exactly right. We all have the right to be wrong. And I commend Jim for putting together this forum. I only wish that it created more unity instead of what appears to be some division. And I hope that everybody can come away with this and say, hey, look, there was some compelling information that challenges us all. Yeah, talk show host, right? No, to think it through a little bit. Okay? And as we contemplate this information, I would hope that, again, ego and pride will be left out of the equation, and that somehow we can all wrap our arms around the saying, united we stand, divided we fall. And there's one more point. I know this is time, but it's sort of like I addressed it in 9/11 plane sight. Let's say we're dealing with the issue about the plane, Flight 77, the Pentagon, okay? Or the plane, the South Tower plane. Well, if the plane didn't hit the Pentagon, where did it go? That's the question everybody asks, but that's a flawed logic. Because the plane could be anywhere. The question should be, if the plane hit the Pentagon, where is it? Okay? So the point here is that we can all go down the rabbit trail and say, well, the plane was actually flown off to someplace in New Mexico to a boneyard. Or the plane was dumped in the ocean off in the Atlantic coast. Or was blown up to the North Pole. Or it was beamed up to the Death Star. It could be anywhere.
Let's cancel the week in advance. It's not in the field yet.
Okay, well, whatever, whatever. The point is that, unfortunately, so many of us are so wrapped up in trying to explain what really happened that we're losing sight of the fact that we know that the official story didn't. So if we can focus on the fact that the official story is a lie, then we can open the doors of thought for all the other possibilities. But we've got to get this thought across to the mainstream American sheeple and help them to understand that we really do need to reopen an investigation with no ties to corporations, no ties to the U.S. government, no ties to anybody except for common people from, in fact, all over the world, because the entire world has been affected by 9/11. It is the world's responsibility to bring together real people and have a real investigation.
Thank you, Dean Conflux, for those excellent comments. I'd just like to say, I felt yesterday there was a tremendous degree of unanimity of opinion about a whole lot of issues that many of us viewed controversial coming in. And as far as today's discussion is concerned, very often it requires a sharpening of differences in order to appreciate respective positions, and I feel tremendous optimism about the capacity to resolve these fascinating complex issues related to video fake leaks and planes or no planes. It's a great pleasure for me at this moment, and I'm going to invite other comments during lunch. And Peggy Carter is going to show more of September clues after we adjourn. But it's my great pleasure at this moment to introduce an investigative journalist and best-selling author. He's published books on many controversial subjects, including secret societies and the assassination of JFK. I know him well. He was a primary source. His book, Crossfire, for Oliver Stone's JFK, a work on 9/11, now includes Inside Job, Unmasking the 9/11 Conspiracies, and the Terror Conspiracy, Deception 9/11, and the Loss of Liberty. Please join me in welcoming Jim Lamars.
Thank you, Jim. Dave Von Kleist just mentioned that I should apologize to all of you because he has to go, and you know what? It's past checkout time, and I'm going to have to go too. But I will take a half minute here. This has been a very, very interesting conference, and I honor each and every one of you who have come here. It's just unfortunate that we only had this little group here where we've got, you know, 260 million people out there who are more concerned about Paris Hilton. And this is, I guess, going to be the thrust of my comments. I can't really tell you all anything about 9/11 that you don't already know. I always have to go and approach an audience that really doesn't know anything. You know, Building 7? What's Building 7? Right? And this is where you have a foot in the door. Going back years ago, and Jim knows about this, in the Kennedy assassination research community, once the idea that the Russians did it, you know, the Cubans did it, pretty well got taken care of because there is absolutely no evidence that shows there was any direct involvement by the Russians or the Cubans or anywhere else, they kept us divided, arguing, and fighting with each other for a good number of times over, okay, was it the CIA? Was it the Mafia? Was it the anti-Castro Cubans? Was it the military? Okay? It's the Cubans did it, the Mafia did it, blah, 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 blah. Well, the truthful answer is, yes. All of the above. And in that particular case, that was all centered into something called Operation Mongoose, which was a combined operation involving the Mafia, the anti-Castro Cubans, the military, the CIA, etc. I'm seeing the same thing here happening with 9/11, okay? You people are the cadre. You people are the nucleus. You people are the ones who care and have actually studied the evidence. I've heard some really interesting theories, very interesting opinions, and I'm open to all of it, okay? I'm having a little hard time wrapping my head around the idea that there are absolutely no planes, but when you, again, when you look at it closely and you do start picking apart the evidence, there is something there probably at least worth considering. Conference like this that Jim has put on is extremely important, and this is the place to hear this evidence and to thrash it out amongst us. My only point was that when you go back to your friends and or relatives and you're trying to tell them what's going on, I would go for the things that we can all agree on and that even the dumbest bulb in the pack can comprehend, okay? This would be the evidence that at least a dozen nations tried to warn us that we were about to be attacked is overwhelming. It's just there. It's documented, okay? This means that our leadership is either one of two things, incompetent idiots or sinister conspirators who kept that information to themselves and used it to their own political advantage.
Yeah.
Okay? Either way, we don't need people like that leading us. Get them the hell out of there, okay? Now, how are we going to do this and how do we make this work? The media is totally controlled. It is totally controlled, and the way they do this is very simple. They don't control every writer and editor out there, but they control the distribution of the information. And if you don't hear it, then it didn't happen. Okay? And when you get the higher you get in the media pyramid of power, when you get to the Sean Hannity's and the Rush Limbaugh's and the talking heads on network television, they are very much under control because they are no better than to do anything that might cost them the money and prestige and perks that they have by being major media. So the media is going to be a tough nut to crack. All right, I would suggest you people go off and start working at your local level. Go to your local newspaper. Go to your local radio TV stations. Find the program editor. Find the news editor. Sit down and in a very rational way with them, explain, lay out the information. There's tons of information. Show it to them. Don't preach, don't harp. Same thing with your friends and relatives. Alright, stick with issues that they can understand. One thing I found was quite effective for the average guy is to say, hey, wait a minute. How are we supposed to believe this war on terror's real when they've done nothing to secure the borders of this country? I mean, are we supposed to be worried about them sneaking weapons of mass destruction into our country? And the borders are wide open. You know, that they understand. Another thing that I have not heard, barely heard mentioned here that goes back to the old journalism adage, follow the money. How would you all like to put up an investment of $124 million and in less than a year you get $4.6 billion back? Not a bad investment, huh? That's a pretty good deal. That's exactly what we see is happening with the World Trade Center. All you have to do is go back and just look at the chronology. The Port Authority had it. Port Authority tried to do something with it. They're having problems with the city because those buildings were half filled with asbestos. Okay, it was not cost effective to renovate them. It was almost not even cost effective to tear them down, plus they had the asbestos problem. But they had to do something because the building materials were deteriorating. Okay, and none of those buildings were ever full. So then let's take it up to 2001. 6 weeks, just 6 weeks before September the 11th, Larry Silverstein and Rugfield Properties takes a 99-year lease for $3.5 billion, but they didn't put up $3.5 billion. They only put up $124 million as a down payment. Now they're the leaseholders, okay? First thing he does, come around, hire Securecom, headed by a cousin to the Bushes, Wirt Walker III, and Marvin Bush, the younger brother of George Bush, sitting on the board of directors. Now they have control of security over the World Trade Center. Next thing he does is run out and get some insurance, specifically demanding and getting and obtaining a clause that says they will pay off in the event of a terrorist attack. You cannot predict terrorist attacks. Damn difficult to get insurance on that. But then you look at the insurance companies involved. Alliance, German insurance company, largest in the world. Swiss Re, British insurance company. Whoa, wait a minute. We're talking about outfits here that are multinational, that are headed and run and by people who attend the Bilderberg meeting. This shows you the level at which we're talking about here. Okay? And sure enough, 6 weeks later, the buildings are blown up, fall down, and they're gone. Silverstein goes to court, convinces the jury, since there were two strikes on the two buildings, that therefore he gets double indemnity and is trying to collect $7 billion. But after wrangling around and working it all out, they finally compromised and they said, we're going to pay you $4.6 billion. And then, are you ready for this? The Port Authority, apparently upset and saddened by the fact that they lost their buildings they were leasing, repaid the $124 million. Here's your money back. That's a lot of money changing hands, and there's a lot of top echelon companies and people involved. One more thing. Silverstein doesn't get to keep all that money. He has to share that with the mortgage holders. And one of the largest mortgage holders is Blackstone Group, whose head chairman is Peter G. Peterson, who I'm sure by just some coincidence happens to be chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations. So that shows you the level this is, and this shows you why the pressure and the media pressure is there to keep this bottled up. And so it's your job to go out and touch on the issues that people can understand, that no building has ever fallen down by fire. Who allowed the bin Ladens to fly across country when we couldn't fly during the no-fly zone? Who ordered the war game exercises that confounded our air defense system, et cetera, et cetera? All these questions have been asked and not answered by anybody in authority. And at that point, we'll get to the truth. And as far as my money goes, I think there's only one way to proceed at this point. It's got to get into some sort of a courtroom situation where we can subpoena witnesses, subpoena documents, find out what's going on. And I would say either go by Barbara's thing where you court-martial the president, or better yet, impeach the lot of them.
Or both.
Or both. One quick thing, Jim. For your neocon friends, why should they fear impeachment? Bill Clinton got impeached on sex with an intern and got off. If Bush, if everybody Bush and Cheney and all these guys, if everything they've done is legitimate and there's no crime involved, then why should they fear an impeachment trial?
Jim Mars, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you all for being here, and I want to assert that our outreach far exceeds our numbers present. I want to thank representatives of Channel 4, Snowshoe Films, The Power Hour, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, the Libertarian Party, Veterans for 9/11 Truth, WORT, Bill Brochures, The Capital Times, American Free Press, and Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Let me say there will not only be a DVD of this conference, but I'm going to edit a book based upon the contributions. And I invite you all to stay later to watch more of September Clues, or if you have tickets to join us for lunch, and we're going to close with a banging of the bell, of the gong. In this case, it's an aluminum pipe and a sledgehammer. And I want to thank you all for being here. I pronounce the conference with a sound of the gong closed.
Oh, that's so perfect. We get to show more videos on this stuff. We have to check out.
Thank you to the Revere Radio Network, which has carried this conference live. I can't thank them enough. Revere Radio Network, James, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been great. And we are winding up our live coverage here on Revere Radio Network. That was the live Science of 9/11 conference. What's controversial? What's not? Live from Madison, Wisconsin, Sunday, August 5th, 2007.